Hello and welcome to another edition of Sight Into Sound Presents. In this edition, we'll get you prepared and ready for the 2026 hurricane season. Chief Meteorologist Travis Herzog from ABC 13 visited our studios to not only discuss general hurricane preparedness, but what the disability community can do to be informed and ready for a possible threat of a tropical storm or hurricane. That's Chief Meteorologist Travis Herzog from ABC 13 on this edition of Sight Into Sound Presents. I'm Jim Martinez. Hello, everyone. This is Jim Martinez, radio manager here at Sight Into Sound Radio, and you're listening to another edition of Sight Into Sound Presents. Today, we have our hurricane preparedness for 2026, a brand new season that we all look forward to. I'm here with Travis Herzog from ABC 13. Travis, hello.
Hey, Jim. Good to be here today.
Yeah, great to have you here. We'll be talking about the usual hurricane preparedness with our audience, is the disability community. So we touch on that as well. First of all, how long have you been at Channel 13?
This July, it will be 20 years.
20 years.
I can't believe those words just left my mouth.
Where did you come from before that?
So before that, I worked at KBTX in Bryan College Station. I actually started working there my junior year at Texas A&M studying meteorology. Okay. And before that, I grew up in San Antonio. So I've kind of lived in a small Texas triangle all my life.
Okay, great. When you first came to town, was Ed Brandon still there?
Yes. In fact, Ed Brandon and I had about 9 months of overlap. And Doug Brown was there as well. Marvin Zindler, Dave Ward, Bob Allen, all the greats were still working at 13.
And you were the young guy.
I was the kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. And people would tell me, you know, how many years they had been working there. And it was, you know, twice my lifespan. And so I would tell them how many days I had been working there just to, you know, inflate the numbers a little bit.
So you got to work with that. And they've all either left or passed away or all that stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. Sheriff Fryer, she's still around. I actually saw her at Dave Ward's funeral. So Dave was kind of the last of that iconic news team that passed away.
And you worked with Marvin Zindler?
Marvin Zindler, yeah. Had about a year of overlap with him. He was quite a character.
A year or so before he passed, he wrote his book and we read it here.
Oh, great.
And he came in to do his, he did promos for it, the whole thing. So.
Yeah, he had a big heart. Marvin was great.
Yeah, he was one of the first consumer advocates in the country. So, yeah. That's great. So those of you who are listening are not in the Houston area. If you're in Houston, you know who these names are. If you're not, look up Marvin Zindler.
Yeah. Quite a story.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah. So, okay, great. So a hurricane season, June 1st through the November 30th. Talk about how a hurricane starts. It starts as a tropical wave.
Yeah, most of them do. Some can form off of fronts, which is a more rare case, but something like Hurricane Alicia actually formed from a front that came south through Louisiana and Mississippi. So we've got to constantly watch the Gulf anytime low pressure gets in there. But most of them do form from what are called tropical waves. These are weather disturbances that blow off the African continent, and they start off as areas of low pressure, and if there's enough moisture around them, and the wind shear, as we call it, is light, meaning that the atmosphere is not disturbed very much, most of those that have those conditions will spin up into either a tropical depression, a tropical storm, or even a hurricane. And so this is around the time of year we start looking out to the east to see what's coming our way. Right now it's mainly Saharan dust that blows our direction. But we do have to watch for some homegrown development, as we call it, as we get into June. Like, for instance, Tropical Storm Allison that hit Houston in 2001 spun up very quickly right as it was approaching Texas. And when we talk about hurricane season, Jim, while the season technically runs until November 30th, the Texas hurricane season basically starts in June, and usually by mid-October, once we get there, we can breathe a sigh of relief, the steering currents change, and at that point, we look to storms in the Pacific near Mexico to send rain our way, but most of the storms will steer away from us by mid-October.
Okay, break it down. Tropical depression, storm, and a hurricane.
Right. So a tropical depression is when you have a well-defined center of low pressure, but the wind speeds are below 39 miles per hour. So that's kind of the embryonic phase where we designate something and they get a number based on the number of storms that have formed. So the first one would be tropical depression number one. Then if it gets wind speeds of 39 miles per hour to 73 miles per hour, now we are talking about a tropical storm. And a tropical storm can cause a lot of flood damage, and they usually don't have the highest winds, but they can create, they can still cause a lot of havoc, especially around here, like we saw with Allison. Yeah. And then once we get to 74 miles per hour, now we have a Category 1 hurricane. The categories of the storm are defined by the strength of the wind speed, and that's all it's based off of. And from there, we go all the way up to a Category 5, which Praise God, we've never had a Category 5 make landfall in Texas. Let's hope that we don't break that someday. Those are very rare, those types of storms. But ones, twos, threes, fairly common to happen here in the Lone Star State.
Tropical depression, tropical storm, we need to take that seriously.
Yes.
Because it's not hurricane, but, oh, we'll be okay. But that's not, like you mentioned, that's not always true.
It's the flood potential. Yeah. We're very flat here, and we get epic amounts of rain with these systems. They can just drop 20 to 30 inches in one night. And if you get that much rain in one night, guess what? It's going to flood.
Yeah. And hurricanes based on warm water. Correct?
Yes, they require water of about 80 degrees Fahrenheit or warmer. And we're basically there.
Yeah.
A place like the Caribbean is there year-round, but we have high wind shear that can tear those early stages apart. So the storms start toppling over, and they can never build up into a bigger storm. Okay. Once the wind shear lessens, that's when we start to see these storms start materializing. And usually all those ingredients come together around August, September, October. And that's kind of the peak where you'll see the most activity in a normal hurricane season.
So Harvey was, what, mid-August?
Harvey was right at the end of August.
Yeah, that's when it was starting to... That's what we said, the waters were starting to get warmer.
Yes. So it made landfall in Rockport on August 25th, 2017. And then 2 days later, phase two of Harvey happened over Houston. And that was the incredible record-setting flood that none of us will ever forget.
No. Yeah. Apocalyptic, as I call it. It was bad. It was, we were down for a week just here in the studios because we had no power and volunteers couldn't get here and just, you know how it is. We all went through that. So,
and we didn't really get the wind part of that.
Yeah,
it was rain. Boy, did we get the rain. Those outer rain bands just sat on us. Yeah. And we saw widespread across the city of Houston, 30 to 40 inches of rain. And there were some spots southeast of town that got closer to 60 inches of rain. A year's worth of rain in 5 days.
Okay, so what's the forecast, or do you know, for 2026?
So we are expecting that 2026 overall will have a lower output of storms in the Atlantic Basin. So when I say the Atlantic Basin, I'm talking about the Caribbean, the Gulf, and the Atlantic Ocean. And that's because of a budding El Nino, which could get very strong over the central and eastern Pacific. It's an ocean temperature change, and usually that supports a lot of activity in the eastern Pacific, which creates a lot of wind shear over the Gulf, the Caribbean, the Atlantic, and that keeps the numbers down. Now, something interesting, Jim, about that is with this El Nino, going back to 1950, when we have the most reliable records on El Nino, La Nina conditions, not a single hurricane has made landfall in Texas when we have an El Nino going on. That doesn't mean it can't happen, but it greatly reduces the odds that we get a hurricane. Can we get tropical storms? Can we get tropical depressions? You bet. But still, overall, it lowers the numbers. But we try not to focus too much on the numbers because we know it only takes one storm hitting here to make it a bad season, right? The example of that would be Hurricane Alicia. Yeah. It's 1983. There's only four storms that form the entire season. The A storm was a Category 3 hurricane that made landfall in Galveston and went right into Houston.
Yeah.
So we say it takes only one,
And
we prepare the same regardless of the numbers forecast because they don't tell us where they're going to go. We can't figure that out until 2 weeks ahead of time. So we always prepare the same.
And El Nino is the warming of water further out?
It is. So there's kind of this cycle or this oscillation that occurs in the Pacific Ocean where the temperatures along the equator will be either warmer than normal or colder than normal. And because the Pacific Ocean is so vast, that change in water temperature alters the jet stream patterns around the globe. So the steering currents change, and it leads to well-noted and researched impacts globally. And for hurricane season, it usually results in a lower number of storms in the Atlantic Basin.
And we have that this year?
We do. It's almost there right now, and most of our guidance indicates that this could be one of the strongest El Niños on record. Now, the counterpoint to that is while it may reduce the number of tropical systems, it usually leads to wet conditions from Texas to Florida. And so we may be dealing with more heavy rainstorms that could still lead to some flooding problems, even if it's not caused by a tropical system.
And does it affect our winters?
It does. It usually brings more precipitation in wintertime, which as a result of the clouds and the rain usually leads to cooler than average temperatures. And so you can sometimes, get a rare snowfall.
So if that happened, El Nino happens this year, it would affect our winter coming up.
Yes.
Later in December.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. La Nina is cooler temperatures?
La Nina is cooler than normal. And the name comes from is kind of an interesting story, because this was observed along the coast of South America, around Peru and Ecuador. Mm-hmm. And they noticed that this warming of the water would usually peak around Christmas time. So they called it El Nino for the boy child. Or the child,
yeah,
right?
Okay, I see.
And so that's where that comes from. It usually peaks in the winter, the warming of the water, and then it goes away.
Okay.
And then La Nina was just kind of, well, let's just do the opposite, right?
Yeah.
Opposite gender, opposite, yeah. You know? We have La Nina. And then what I like to point out, though, is there's a phase where we have neither, because we're just kind of near average.
Okay.
I call that jokingly La Nada. All right.
That's good.
But here's the thing to note about this La Nada phase. The vast majority of hurricanes that have hit Texas occur in the La Nada phase.
Yeah.
So we like to get into El Nino, and La Nina is okay, but La Nada is what makes me really concerned. And that's where we were when we had Beryl hit us 2 years ago. That's where we were when Harvey hit Texas, when Alicia hit, when Carla hit. So some of the who's who of Texas hurricanes have hit in that intermediate phase. And so we're still in that phase, but we're going to come into El Nino pretty quickly.
Okay.
So I'm concerned for this season about early season development. So we're talking June, July, maybe some sort of a weaker depression or storm tries to sneak into Texas. It's not going to be a wind event if that happens, but could there be some really heavy rains? That would be a possibility.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter. When you lose power, you lose power.
Absolutely.
You don't care what it is.
Especially when it's the middle of summer.
Yeah.
It's hot.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay. That's great information. The Saharan dust, we hear about that every year. A few years in Houston, it'll get bad. People will be affected by it, their allergies, or if they have severe allergies. Saharan dust is out of Africa?
It is. It's out of the Saharan Desert. And there are just these massive dust storms that occur. And the same steering currents that send those tropical waves westward across the Atlantic towards the Caribbean and the Gulf also send these giant plumes of sand and dust. Now, the heavier particles, they fall out of the sky pretty quickly in the eastern Atlantic. But these really tiny particles, some are almost microscopic, they will traverse and take the 4,000-mile trek across the Atlantic because they're suspended a few miles above the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's so hot and dry, there's no rain to rain it out. And so they can make it all the way into Texas, and we will get respiratory issues in folks that are sensitive to those dust clouds because of what it does. And also we notice that the sky turns a hazy gray, and so there's some impacts there with how things look outside. But really what we care most about is those who are sensitive to it, and they notice it with either their lungs or maybe triggers and induces asthma attacks in really sensitive individuals.
Is there a yearly forecast for that?
We don't really actually have a yearly forecast for that. It hasn't been studied too intensely. It's been going on for eons, but it wasn't really until the 1970s that people started paying more attention. And usually when we see a high frequency of those dust plumes, it also inhibits tropical activity because the dry, dusty air kind of chokes off any developing system.
Okay.
They can still form, but it decreases the numbers overall.
Okay. But you always keep an eye on it, and people ask about it.
We do because, since we've started, and to be honest with you, Jim, not to toot my own horn, but it was about 2013 or so that we started getting NASA modeling, and I started just showing it on TV here in Houston. I was like, look, we can actually see this stuff coming our way with this NASA modeling. And now all the weather graphics companies now give us products that we can show it pretty easily. So a lot of people are saying, like, I've never heard of these clouds before. Well, they've been happening all the time. We just couldn't show you the computer modeling.
Yeah. Now you can.
Now we can.
Yeah.
And then people started putting two and two together. Oh, every time you start talking about one of these, I notice I'm a little wheezy or my allergies flare.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of helped people clue into an unexpected allergen that can occur in the middle of summer.
Be ready for it. Yeah. So Harvey was category 4?
At landfall, it was a category 4.
Okay. And Beryl was 1?
It was a 1, strengthening though,
okay,
and approaching category 2.
And even though people say, oh, it's a 1, you still have deaths. You still have, your house is flooded. So the none of it really matters if it hits your house. So a lot of people take it, well, it's not a 4. It's not a Harvey. Harvey's the marker now. So we've said, oh, it's a one or two. You still have to take it seriously.
You do. And I'm glad you brought this up, Jim, because that's kind of one of my pet peeves when people dismiss a storm based on the category. Yeah. A hurricane is still a hurricane. Let's talk about a severe thunderstorm. We issue severe thunderstorm warnings, not we, but the National Weather Service, when the wind speed gets to 58 miles per hour. That's a severe thunderstorm warning. When it gets to 80 miles per hour, like we had during the May derecho a couple years ago, that gets the label of a destructive thunderstorm warning. Hurricane Beryl's eye wall, which raked right through Houston, was basically like having a destructive severe thunderstorm for 2 to 4 hours. It was terrible.
Yeah.
And a lot of folks, when they experience a hurricane, they usually oftentimes don't get hit by what we call the eye wall. That's that ring of really fast winds around the center of the storm. And then there's the calm eye in the middle.
Yeah.
Well, if you just get hit by the outer rain bands, the winds are maybe 30, 40, gusting to 50. And you think, oh, that's it? That's a hurricane? That's not bad. Yeah. Well, you actually didn't get hit by the worst part of the storm.
Yeah.
And that's why we care so much where the eye is going, because of the impacts. And so I did a little study, because so many people were telling me there's no way this was a Category 1. There's no way. It was just too strong. And, you know, this was worse than this storm, that storm. And I said, okay, well, where were you during Ike? Where were you during Alicia? Where were you during these storms? And it turns out they were in places that missed the eye wall.
Yeah.
This was the first time since Alicia, 1983. So it had been over 40 years since the right side of the hurricane's eye wall had come across the city of Houston. And that is the absolute worst part of the storm. That's where you get the strongest winds, you get the tornadoes, you get the heaviest rain. So we call that the front right quadrant. That's what came through Houston during Beryl. And that's why just a Category 1 was so destructive.
Yeah. Talk about clean and dirty. What does that mean? And where it hits us, like you mentioned, it's where it hits you.
Right. So we talked about, I just mentioned that front right quadrant. Mm-hmm. So the so-called dirty side of the storm is basically to the right of the track that it's taking. So if it's moving in, right of where the eye makes landfall is where you're going to have the highest storm surge, because the winds are coming directly on shore to push the water inland. You're going to have the strongest winds and the greatest likelihood of tornadoes. On the opposite side, the left side of the track is what we call the clean side. Usually the eye wall is not as strong. Sometimes that isn't the case, but usually it's not as strong. There's far less tornadoes, and the rain bands stop pretty quickly once you get about 50 miles away from the eye. Once you get west of that, it's just a breezy day with hardly any rain. Whereas when you get to the right of the eye, those rain bands can extend 150, 200 miles to the east because those winds are coming off the Gulf and drawing in all the moisture.
Okay.
Whereas on the opposite side, the left side, the wind's from the north and it's drawing down dry air.
So you
always get the most significant impacts in the eye wall and then to the right of the eye.
Okay. And like I said, it doesn't matter where your house is where you're going to get hit. So, you know, you're North Houston, west, where the storm is coming, that's it.
Yeah, these are really big storms.
Yeah.
Usually the eye will be anywhere from 15 to 30 miles wide. Well, you know, Harris County is about 30 miles wide.
Yeah,
so, you know, that's the size we're talking about.
And then real quick on Harvey, next year will be the 10-year anniversary of Harvey. Mm-hmm. What do we learn from that? People have said Mother Nature has the final say-so. So how do we prepare for that again, you know, in a different way, a better way?
Yeah, Harvey taught us that no matter how hard we try to mitigate against floods, they're still going to happen.
Yeah.
And it also showed us kind of the worst case scenario of what can happen. There is some research that shows that the storm actually sped up a little bit, believe it or not, as much as it sat over us. And if it had stayed on that slower speed that was initially predicted by the Hurricane Center, we could have had close to 90 inches of rain over Houston, double the amount that we got, which is unfathomable. So it kind of showed us near the upper limit of what can happen rain-wise. And it also showed us what happens when every single watershed, there's over 20 different watersheds of bayous and creeks through Harris County alone. What happens when all of them go out of their banks at the same time?
Yeah.
And it also showed us what a resilient people we are.
Yeah.
And how we all came together to do our best to love our neighbors and rescue who we could. Anyone with a flat bottom boat, a high profile truck, we had people coming from out of state. Just the sea of humanity in the wake of that storm was something truly beautiful and still brings tears to my eyes to this day.
You didn't have to ask for help because people were just helping because they needed help too.
Right.
So you're all in it together.
Right.
All in the same boat. I shouldn't say that, but you know.
I understand. A literal boat in some cases. But what we learned and what we've done since then is the city's made some smart moves because we have to learn to live with the water.
Correct.
These floods will keep happening, whether it's from a hurricane or just a stalled front. that's the history of Houston. The city was founded at the intersection of Buffalo Bayou and White Oak Bayou by the Allen Brothers. Yeah. Okay. Flooding is part of our history. We have to learn to live with the water. And so, for instance, on the southwest side near Meyerland, you've seen a lot of the older homes get raised up 8 to 10 feet. You've seen a waterproof Starbucks that's been built. The HEB in Meyerland Plaza, the whole lower level is just a parking garage. Yes. Same in Bel Air, right? Yeah. Because that's going to flood, but the store won't, right? So we're learning that we need to build smarter to adapt to the floods that we have. And we are in a warming planet. The climate is changing. We are seeing more intense floods. Mm-hmm. And so we have to keep that in mind as we go forward building out this city. And it just blows my mind, Jim, that in Harris County alone, there's now estimated 5.2 million people. There's a lot of people here.
And they're still coming.
And they're still coming. And that's one reason why Houston, or rather Harris County, out of all the counties across the entire country, counties and parishes, it is the most vulnerable county to billion-dollar disasters, because we have so many people congregated here, and what the weather throws at us can do a lot of damage, whether it's from a hurricane, a winter storm, as we found out in 2021, or just a flood or a severe storm. It can cause a lot of damage because there's so many people here.
Wow. So speaking of that, preparedness, I found out a lot of the precincts, they have their own little workshop seminars throughout the summer. So people, you know, look up your own precinct and they'll help you. That's what they're there for.
It's really useful, too, if you're new to the community.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're maybe like, I don't know about these hurricanes. Yeah. Tell me more. They can give you some really great resources.
Yeah. So preparedness, you know, sign up for alerts, warnings. ABC 13 is real good with that.
Yes. Yeah. So when it comes to preparedness, I like to think of the three phases of a potential hurricane impact. There's the before phase, which is really right now, right?
Exactly.
We know that eventually another hurricane is going to come. The average return period around here is every 5 to 10 years. We don't know how strong it's going to be or exactly where it's going to hit, but we just know they're going to keep coming. And so we can always be in that preparation phase. Then there's kind of you got to be thinking about what you're going to do during the storm and then what you're going to do after. But we want to spend most of the time on what we would do before the storm.
Correct.
The preparation
phase. Before doesn't mean 2 days before it hits.
No.
It means now.
It means now before there's even anything threatening the Gulf. There are things that you can and should be doing right now. The first thing is you need to make a plan. Start by assessing your risk. If your part of town is prone to wind damage, flooding, know what your risk is. And from there, you can decide, if a storm comes, will I evacuate or will I stay? That's an important consideration, because those two paths will send you on different preparations. Mm-hmm. If your plan is to evacuate, let's say that you need assistance evacuating. You need to right now call 211. Very simple. 211. Yeah. You'll hit a registry in the state of Texas where they will register you saying that you are, let's say you have a disability or for whatever the reason is, you need assistance in evacuation. You will be on their list. So you will get priority to be evacuated should a hurricane come. And Jim, the only reason that evacuations are ordered by local governments and municipalities is for storm surge, when the water comes in from the Gulf and it floods, you know, gets 6, 10, 12 feet above the ground and floods out communities. That's near the coast. But there are also evacuation assistances for those who are disabled or elderly and need that help and have other considerations. So you've got to think, do I rely on electronically powered medical equipment for my life, for the people in my home? And if it's a yes, then you have to think, if the power goes down and I can't generate my own power, what am I going to do? Well, you probably need to get out of that situation and get out ahead of time. So the first thing is decide if you're going to evacuate or stay. And if you need assistance evacuating, register for 211.
Yeah. And that's every year.
Every year. So, and a lot of people aren't aware of this. It's not one and done. You have to do it for every member of your family. Also tell them about any pets you may have, maybe a service animal or a family pet that would be coming along. And then they purge the system every year. And I'm unclear if it's at the start of the year or just 365 days from when you first registered, but just make it a habit of maybe January 1st every year.
Yeah.
Call 211. Don't wait until May, June, July, and certainly do not wait until there's a storm already in the Gulf.
Yeah,
it's too late at that
point. It's too late. Yeah. Yeah. And then you're scared on top of that.
Right. So it's there's just an added layer of security knowing, okay, they're aware of my situation. I'm on the list. I'm going to get priority if I need to be evacuated.
Yeah, just get on the list.
Get on 211.
There's some other websites throughout the country, disabilitypreparedness.gov, prepare.org, which is part of the Red Cross, and the Red Cross, too. That's what they're there for. Also, know your neighbors as well. We're in a time where we don't know our neighbors.
Right. So. And so my encouragement to everyone is identify three people. Build out your community of neighbors, friends, family. Identify three people that you could turn to and lean on if you needed assistance preparing for a hurricane or evacuating from a hurricane. And have this conversation with them. If a hurricane comes, this is what I need from you. Can you provide me with that assistance? And if it's a yes, then count them as part of your network that could help you in your time of need.
Yeah. And also medical treatments. If you're in dialysis or going through chemo, ask your doctor. Right. So what do I do? What do you guys do? I need to know.
Can you get me extra medicine? Make sure your prescriptions are up to date, fully prepared, and you have those medicines on hand. Also have some cash on hand in case the electronic systems go down. And if you're visually impaired and use Braille, when you create your kit, maybe your go bag of things to take with you, make sure you're putting some Braille labels on things so that you can quickly identify what you have, and so you don't get confused by what's medicine, what's my soap,
things like that. Right? So also, if you have medical documents, I put them in the Ziploc bags because you don't know. You just don't know. Service animal, that's good. Like I said, the electricity, your cane, wheelchair.
Yes.
You're in a wheelchair. That's a whole nother discussion about how you can't drive.
Right.
Find out a driver.
And if you rely on a cane, have a spare cane too if you have one. Bring that as well.
And I tell people all the time, if you tell people you need help, they'll help.
That's right.
Or if they don't know, they'll get someone to help you.
Absolutely. But
they may need help too. A lot of people are a little too proud, or they don't mean to be, but it ends up that way.
When we get into hurricane season, you need to find a trusted and reliable source of information with a proven track record. Yeah. There's a lot of misinformation and disinformation out there. So find those trusted voices. Yeah. Maybe you find me as one of your trusted voices or ABC 13. We will be there for you during the storm. But make sure that you find that trusted voice. And I always encourage folks to get a NOAA weather radio.
Okay.
The beautiful thing about a NOAA weather radio is that they give voice output. So it'll tell you in plain language what the threat is. If there's a hurricane watch or hurricane warning or any type of weather event year round, it'll keep you well informed with those audio alerts and voice output.
And that's coming from the headquarters, so to speak.
That's coming straight from the National Weather Service. And they are staffed around the clock during these weather events to make sure that those life-saving warnings and information are getting out.
Also, when they say evacuate, you need to evacuate.
Yeah, if you are in the zip code that's called to evacuate, just get out.
Yeah.
It can be financially costly. And it can be, sometimes if you evacuate and the storm doesn't end up being as bad as was expected, you can think, well, that was a waste of my time and money. But on the flip side, if the storm did come and hit you, you would have been so grateful that you were not there.
Yeah. We talk about emergency kit. They do that every year. So we're talking food, water, first aid, personal hygiene, clean air items, such as a mask if you need one, duct tape, baby items, household items, lighting, flashlights.
Flashlights,
batteries, battery radio, smoke detector. If you stay, make sure that
carbon monoxide is the big one.
That's a killer.
Yeah. What's interesting, Jim, is that we've gotten to a place now where the forecasts are getting so good and people are getting the message and taking action. We're seeing more people that are dying after the storm than because of the storm, because of carbon monoxide poisoning or heat stress because the AC went out and they didn't get out and evacuate, right? So, and our trees falling down when we're trying to clear out, things like that. So we're seeing more fatalities in most storms now after because of the conditions that are left behind.
The generators. The gas power generators that can seep into your house.
Yeah, so if you have a portable generator, do not put it inside your home. Don't even put it against the home. Yeah. 20 feet away is what's recommended.
Not in the garage either.
And if you have one, make sure you have a carbon monoxide sensor because sometimes the air will get very still at night.
Yeah.
And you might think it's everything's safe, but that carbon monoxide still ends up coming in through your attic soffits. And, you want to make sure that you don't mess around when it comes to generators.
Yeah. If you're able, tools, hammers, nails, screwdrivers, eBay, we all take that for granted.
Right.
But you're going to need that when you have to board up or take boards down or someone gets trapped.
Right.
And 911 is being called nonstop and they can't come right away.
Yeah, if you stay, you need to be prepared to kind of be on your own for about 3 days because you don't know what the road conditions are going to be like, the power situation, et cetera.
And the food and water, what, 7 days?
7 days. And you want to make sure that you have a gallon of water for each person that's staying with you. And one kind of Hack there is you can fill up a bathtub with a lot of water.
Yeah, I did that.
To have that in advance.
I did that.
In case the water, because sometimes the water systems will get contaminated afterwards, and then you've got to boil everything.
Barrel, I wasn't going to do, because again, it's category one. I fell for that. But I remember during the freeze, I filled up my bathtub, and during barrel coming in, the water pressure was kind of low, and I said, no, I'm filling it up.
Yeah.
And I didn't need it. I had water. I didn't have power, but I had water.
Yeah.
But that relief was there. The pressure was off because I had a bathtub full of water.
Right.
And so take the pressure off you.
Yeah. And if you're feeling anxious ahead of an approaching storm, one of the best things you can do is channel that nervous energy into finalizing your preparations and doing
productive.
Those things.
Yeah. So, and like I said, be prepared now, not 2 days before.
Right. Because then there's the mad rush for all the supplies. Store shelves get wiped out. So start stocking up on those non-perishables, maybe a can of tuna here and there, some crackers that, well, you know, the Twinkies, whatever, those will last for years, right? All those kinds of things. And those are great things to kind of help you through the storm as well. Yeah. You know, some little comfort foods to snack on. Really? Just don't eat your entire supply.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It'll be gone in 3 hours. So, and water lasts a good while too.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when if you don't need it, you can drink it.
Yeah.
At the end of the hurricane season.
Exactly. So whatever supplies are left, if you think, okay, these are going to expire in the next year, have a hurricane party.
Yeah.
A celebration of the end of hurricane season.
Yeah. We got through another one. And pets. We need to take care of our pets, not just service animals, just pets in general.
Pets
in general. Some of them have medical needs as well.
Yes, they do. In fact, that was one of the complicating things with Beryl. Normally, I send my family away simply because I know I'm hunkered down at the station for a few days, and if something happens, I can't take care of them.
Yeah.
And I just don't like having that in the back of my mind.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
This time around with Beryl, we now have a dog, a cat, two guinea pigs that had recently been adopted. And my son was very concerned about re-traumatizing them with an evacuation. So I said, okay, y'all can stay. It's just a one, right?
Yeah, exactly.
After that, they said, you know what? I don't think we're ever going to stay again.
When it's your first one, it's the big one.
Yeah. And here's a big consideration, too. Is the trees around your home.
Yeah.
If there are tall pine trees, you might consider taking those down, because both in Beryl and the derecho, most of the people who died in those storms from the wind was because of pine trees falling into homes, because they're very tall and they can just slice a home in half and there's nothing you can do about it.
Hurricane Ike, there was a lot of trees falling.
A lot of tree damage.
That's, speaking of when you're hunkered down, what's the procedure with you? You just spend the night or the week at the station?
Yeah, we're basically there during the duration of the storm. And so we bring in extra food, water. We have a generator with plenty of gasoline on standby. They bring in cots. If you have an office, you can sleep in there with a sleeping bag. But we're basically a 24/7 operation.
What's the longest you've been on the air?
The longest? Well, we usually do like 12-hour shifts.
Okay.
I can't really think of a time that I've been on significantly longer than 12 hours. I would say during the Memorial Day flood, I was on for quite a bit of time solo that night back in 2015. But usually we try to, you know, give people rest. And really the most challenging shift I ever worked was August 27th when Harvey came in. And we just suddenly started seeing all of the reports of people saying, hey, my so-and-so is trapped in their attic. Can you send help? And you're just getting inundated with all of these pleas for help. And it was just a little... It psychologically wore on us quite a bit. You feel helpless in a sense because there's so much need. And that's where we all band together as the people of Houston and surrounding communities, and we help each other out.
Yeah. And we're recording this in May. This is the time to prepare. We keep saying, but it's true. Don't wait till the week of, because it's too late.
Yeah.
There's
Do what you can now.
Yeah.
Do what you can now. We understand these are tough economic times. You know, inflation's done a number on everyone. So do what you can. Build up your kit over time. Maybe, you know, once a week you make a small purchase of some extra water, some extra non-perishable food items, some extra batteries, and just build that up.
Yeah, know your neighbor. That's the big one, too.
Absolutely. I think, so. Establish those relationships.
Yeah. Let's wrap this up. I always wanted to ask this question. Do you, as the guy on TV... do you get blamed for bad weather? Like, you ruined my birthday party, my outdoor wedding. Do you ever, like, it's your fault? Do you ever get
We get all sorts of comments like that, and lots of jokes. And people thank us for the weather sometimes too. And I have to remind them, like, I'm not responsible for the weather. That's God's deal. So.
We're just reporting it.
Right. Now, obviously we feel the weight of whenever there's a blown forecast, because, you know, the weather is still going to do what the weather's going to do. And we don't always get it right, but we've gotten way better over the last few decades. But we always, you know, no one gets more upset when the forecast is wrong than the people that are on TV delivering the forecast, because we know people are making plans around that. And our aim is always to do the best we can and get it as right as we can every single time.
Yeah. What's your preparedness? Do you all have meetings, meteorologists in town or nationally about, okay, June 1st, we got to be ready?
Yeah. So springtime is kind of the off season where you see a lot of conferences happening around what's new with the National Hurricane Center, what's the latest in evacuation routes. And so all those things have been happening these last few months. And now we're just kind of getting into that mode of, all right, we've prepared for what we need to do, and we're just going to wait and see what the season ahead brings. Hopeful that this El Nino will deliver and knock the numbers down and steer the storms away from Texas.
And don't just think, oh, I'm okay until August. Because Beryl was in July.
Beryl was the rare July hurricane. Yeah. We've even had hurricanes hit the Western Gulf as early as June. A really bad one named Audrey hit in 1957.
Yeah.
Just missed Texas. It went into Cameron Parish right across from the Sabine River, or Sabine Pass. But it was a devastating major hurricane in June.
Yeah.
So it can certainly happen.
And anytime. The technology wasn't like it was now.
No, it was not.
So
and that's what I'm grateful for, is that we can now detect things so far in advance, even things that have not yet developed. We know that they're going to come. This is, out of all the natural disasters, this is the one that you can prepare for the earliest and know the most in advance of what's going to happen, you know, relative to, say, an earthquake or a tornado or a wildfire. We know these things are coming, and you can prepare for them before they're even a threat.
In this day and age, we all should be informed anyway with technology the way it is.
Yeah.
You should be able. It's not like it was before.
It's at our fingertips.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So does Channel 13 have weather alerts, hurricane alerts, for those who don't know?
So we relay the weather alerts passed on by the National Hurricane Center, the National Weather Service, through our app. So we have push alerts there. We also have a 24/7 streaming channel that you can access through our apps, whether it's from your connected TV or your cell phone. You can just listen to that almost like a radio station if you need to. And we will constantly be putting information out when there's inclement weather through those devices.
Okay, so go to either ABC 13 or your favorite platform. Like I said, the information is out there. There's no excuse now. It's out there.
It is. So. And you have to seek out the good information.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the bad information has a way of finding you without doing anything at all.
Yeah. And like I said, again, if you're scared, that changes everything too. Be prepared now. Travis Herzog, thank you for joining us. I know you're busy. So, and you'll be busy this summer. Hopefully not with hurricanes.
Too busy. It was my pleasure, Jim. Thank you for allowing me to speak to your audience.
Yeah. This is Jim Martinez with Travis Herzog on another edition of Sighting to Sound Presents. Thank you to ABC 13's chief meteorologist, Travis Herzog, for taking time out of his busy schedule to join us in the Sight into Sound studios and informing us about preparedness for the 2026 hurricane season. Once again, if you need assistance before a storm hits, please call 211 and give them your information for your evacuation needs. Once again, please call 211. Sighting to Sound Presents is a production of Sighting to Sound Radio, Houston, Texas. I'm Jim Martinez.